Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets as we move along here on the program. We're going to have a very special guest joining us momentarily. That's going to be Lawrence Dawsey, former Giants wide receiver. He was on the 1996 team. He was the Florida State wide receivers coach when Travis Rudolph played for him. So we are going to get his feedback on what Travis Rudolph will bring to the New York Giants, as that wide receiver spot is one to watch on the back end of the depth chart. But before we get to that, Paul, some news from the Giants in terms of their roster, just as we're about to go on here, and they have made a roster move to add another defensive lineman, and they're bringing in Corbin Bryant, the former Buffalo Bills, spent the last four seasons with the Bills, and this continues the theme, another veteran to help build some competition on the back end.
Yeah, he's a 300-pounder who was out of position last year in Buffalo. They had some injuries, and as a result, they were asking him to play the nose tackle spot, which is not really his typical spot there in the middle of the line. He'll play more of the other defensive tackle spot with the Giants, I believe, and basically also fought through a shoulder injury that cost him like a third of the season. Yeah. So, you know, there were obviously some people who are going to wait to see physically how he was before they brought him in for a workout. The Giants obviously decided after taking a look at him that he would be a potential competition, and we already know that between Bromley and Thomas, you know, you got some guys who are going to be fighting for a job. There's also Jerome James, the Notre Dame free agent. Is that you know what? Sometimes I forget some of these guys'
names.
About
some of the other defensive linemen on the roster.
Yeah, well, there's the Notre Dame defensive tackle, and I'm really blacking out here, and I feel foolish, and no disrespect intended to that young man for sure, but he's another gentleman who is going to try to enhance the depth chart, and so they're bringing in a veteran here, and we'll see what happens. I mean, no promises are being made, but I will say this. Guy's got some experience, and a guy who now with the shift in position in the Giants 4-3 with what they'll ask him to do, it will be different than what he was asked to do last year in Buffalo when obviously the production, I guess, wasn't there for them to decide to re-sign him.
Jerron Jones, you referred to.
Jerron Jones.
Yes.
Is that who I said it was?
You said James Jones.
I said James.
I think you said, who's a basketball player and also a former
Jerron
wide receiver.
Jerron Jones.
You were
yes.
in the same ballpark, at least. Yes, that's who you're referring to. Well, here's the thing. If you look at the roster right now, Paul, the defensive tackles, and you were hinting at this, you've got now a mix of some young guys who have something to prove, and then you also have some established veterans. And I think that you could say that that was pretty much part of the game plan to get the roster to look like that at various positions, where you have experience versus youth, and then let the best man win, essentially.
Well, you know, we know who the two starters are probably going to be. Tomlinson is ticketed as a starter. I think it would be an upset if he's not. But let's not kid ourselves. He's still a rookie. He's not going to play every snap, all right? Snacks, not going to play every snap. They will have to have guys who will play important snaps who are going to back up that spot. And we're not just talking about the sub package either. There are going to be times when on run downs, the backup defensive tackle is going to have to take some snaps. It's going to happen. And you don't want that guy to go in and basically collapse, fold, and allow somebody to gash you up the middle for an 8-yard run. You just don't want that.
And I think there's also an opportunity. Now, Jonathan Hankins, we talked about this while he had his Giants tenure. There were ups and downs in terms of his sack totals. There was the year he had 7, then obviously the numbers went down. But I think there's an opportunity here, Paul. If somebody can also prove they can get to the pass and impact the quarterback, you know, that could maybe carve out a role within this defensive tackle spot.
I don't necessarily know about that because I do think that the other ends they have on the depth chart are capable of sliding down. So I don't know that they need that out of the backup defensive tackle. I think the backup DT has to be more of a guy who can just hold the point of attack. That's what I think. I could be wrong, but that's what I think.
Well, it would be icing on the cake if somebody could at least emerge in that
department. That I'll agree with.
An added bonus. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We're going to get to your phone calls, get to your tweets a little bit later on. But right now we are joined by a very special guest, and that is former New York Giant, by the way. Played for the Giants in 1996, Florida State wide receivers coach. So he's very familiar with one of the newest Giants additions, Travis Rudolph, and that is Lawrence Dawsey. Lawrence, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great.
Thanks, Lawrence. Appreciate it.
Well, Lawrence, let's start with what you know, the ins and outs about Travis Rudolph. But before we get to that, what was your reaction? Rudolph obviously wasn't drafted, but when he had an opportunity to sign with a team that you're quite familiar with, what was the first thing that came to mind?
Oh, I was thinking he is in a football city, a football team. He's going to have a great time in New York with the Giants. That's the first thing I thought about.
Well, you know, Lawrence, most folks here up in New York know about the story about how he befriended a middle school child at lunch and sat with him at the table. It's been an internet sensation. And we also obviously know about the tragic story when his dad was shot and killed shortly before the draft. Those are the things that have reached the newspapers. What can you tell us about this young man before we dive into him as a football player that would enhance our perspective of what he's about?
Oh, he's as knowledgeable of the game, you know, a student of the game, love the game of football, but just a great kid. From what everything you know said is absolutely right on about Travis. You know, not only did we not have any problems with him off the field, but he was such an instrumental leader for our team. You know, he was one of the leaders and the reason why we had so much success when we got off to a rough start. So that's the kind of guy you want in your program and kind of guy that you can win championships with.
More of a vocal leader, Lawrence, or more of a leader by example kind of guy?
Both. He did both of us. You know, we had guys in our room, and he was a junior. We had some other seniors in there, but he was our guy. He led the group. They responded to him, and, you know, we had a young quarterback, and he was able to get in the quarterback head and get timing and do things with him, pull him out and go work when they just do one-on-one stuff just to make sure that they was always on the same page. So he's the kind of guy that definitely know what it takes to win and the kind of guy that don't mind working.
Well, and Lawrence, it seems as if those character traits translated over to the football field, because if you look at his numbers last season, was one of the most accomplished wide receivers on the roster. What jumped out to you about his play and how you utilized him within the scheme?
He was such a smart kid that we could move him anywhere and play all three positions that we had. And we actually did that. Coach Fisher recognized his skill set, and we'll let him to just get him away from other teams that was trying to double him. We'll put him and move him and get him in motion and move him around to be able to still get the ball to him. And he responded well. He responded real well for us.
I was going to say, in terms of lining him up, you mentioned you moved him around. Was there a spot, though, that you felt that he flourished more so than others, as opposed to the inside versus the slot? What did you see in terms of where you lined him up?
Well, we've seen most of the time when we get him out one-on-one, when we was in our pro-style set and we had him one-on-one, we knew any time he was one-on-one that he was going to win. We felt that we can get the ball to him any time he was one-on-one. And so when we had the opportunity to move him, to put everybody on one side and move him over there and let it isolated, we felt that he was very, very good with doing that. And he also, when we brought him in motion and put him in combination to be able to read the coverages, because in our system you have to do adjustments off of what the defense is doing, and he was smart enough to read the coverages to be able to do a lot of that stuff. So we utilized him in that scheme set as well.
Again, talking to former Giants receiver Lawrence Dossie, now the Florida State wide receivers coach. Travis Rudolph is an interesting player for me, Lawrence, because, yeah, he was undrafted. But when the Giants brought him in, first thing I did was try to look at as much tape as I could get my hands on of him with the Seminoles. I'd like you to tell me if I'm accurate first when I give you my description. And then also I'd like you to tell me what he's going to have to do to become an NFL receiver and make the jump. First off, I saw a guy who had strong hands, who was not afraid to go over the middle, who was tough and physical, and could get yards after the catch, not necessarily because he was fast, but because he broke tackles. And he was very, very headstrong in trying to get extra yards after the catch. That's what I saw from him. Is that what you see? Is there something else that I'm missing? And what does he have to polish up?
Well, the main thing I told him, he got the skill set to play up there on that league. The thing that I told him that we didn't do a good job, or we didn't put him on a lot of special team stuff because he was our guy and we couldn't afford to get him hurt. So I told him to make the Giants, he got to be able to be a part of the special team packages that's going to be going in with the special team coach. But for the receivers, you know, he got all the attributes that you need when it comes to playing the receiver. And so he can run good routes, got good hands, and when he get the ball mindset I try to put in our guys, we want to put points on the board. Big plays. So his mindset is to try to score every time he touched the ball. And that's the thing he need to try to carry over when you get to that level, because everybody's good and fast up there. So you got to do the extra things to make yourself stand out in that league. And that's what I was stressing to him. You got to do them things to separate yourself from other guys.
You know what's interesting to me, Lawrence? I saw a lot of toughness in his physical kind of play. To me, that would lend itself to special teams. But some guys, as you know, you had teammates, I'm sure, in the NFL when you played, they don't have the heart to play special teams. You think he took your words to heart? Does he have that inside of him?
No doubt. That's why I say he could have did it for us. You know, a lot of people recruited him as a DB when he came out of college. I mean, came out of high school to play defensive back. But we liked him as a receiver. But he definitely got it in him to play the special teams. That's why I told him he got to get that mindset back into doing it. Not saying that he lost it, but I just know we didn't do it for him because we didn't want to take a chance of him getting hurt on special teams for us. So we didn't use him at that. But I know at that next level, that's what I told him. He got to get his mindset ready to start doing all the things he did in high school, which he can definitely do it. I don't know that in my mind about him doing it. It's just he hadn't done it. And so that's the thing I was stressing to him, to take advantage of that part as well. But for the receiver, I don't worry about nothing when it comes to playing receiver up there in that level. You know, it's just about, like I told him, get involved with special teams, because that's going to be the deciding factor, especially when you ain't that top three guys. You got to do more than just play receiver.
Sure.
Well, and Lawrence, speaking of playing wide receiver, it's not so much just catching the football, and you know this well from your playing career, but it's also being willing to block up the field and aid the running game and aid the rest of the offense. And from what I've read and from what I've seen, it seems as if he's a very willing blocker, which probably will bode well to help on special teams. What have you seen in terms of his blocking?
If you don't block, you ain't going to play for Florida State. I try to stress, for football-wise, we're not just wide receiver. We football players, and you got to be able to play on not only just wide catching football. You got to be able to play in the special team, and you got to block. If you don't block, you don't play. And that's one thing to get their attention quick, because we believe in being complete football.
Well, you know, Lawrence, one thing that you're telling me right now, it sounds like he is about as pro-ready as a guy could be. So let me ask you this. Going into the draft, I'm sure from your estimation, he probably should have been drafted. Why do you suppose that some teams overlooked him? And how many teams do you know of were willing to try to give him a shot? Obviously, he landed with the Giants. Was there a hot and heavy competition to try to get him?
Yes, some teams was reaching out to me for help to try to get him to sign as a free agent. You know, I think what really hurt him is the disappointing 40 time he had at the combine.
Right.
You know, I think if he'd have ran a better time at the combine, he definitely would have been drafted. You know, but for his pro ready and route running and understanding offenses and defenses, that's gonna be an easy transition for him. Very easy transition. I definitely wanted him to come back because I'm selfish a little bit. You know, winning championships. But you're getting a guy that, in my mind, definitely going to be on that team when they're all said and done, when they start the regular season.
Talking with Lawrence Dossey, former Giant, current Florida State wide receivers coach, worked with Travis Rudolph. Well, you just mentioned that you would have loved to have had him back, Lawrence. I'm just curious, what do you think could have benefited him if he would have maybe hung around for an additional year at Florida State?
Well, hopefully he would have ran a better time, you know, than he ran at the combine. But as far as, you know, the game-wise and understanding everything, it wouldn't have really benefited him more. So he would have graduated, because he was a good student as well. So he would have definitely graduated on time. That would have benefited him. But for his football-wise, he's pro-ready for that when it comes to playing the game. He's ready for the game.
Earlier, Paul had mentioned, Lawrence, about some of the adversity that he had to deal with, and you spoke volumes about what he is in terms of his off-the-field mannerisms and his behavior in terms of a leader. But what do you think it says about an individual as young as Travis is, for what he had to deal with, how he still has remained focused on football? And when he first met the media here in New York, Lawrence, you know, one of the things he said, everybody was telling him about, you got Odell Beckham, you have Brandon Marshall, you have Sterling Shepard. There's so much depth here at the wide receiver position, and, you know, he seemed to have that confidence factor where he said, you know what, well, I'm just as talented and I'm willing to throw my name in the hat. So what does it say about his character and him dealing with adversity and still rising to the occasion?
this says a whole lot, you know. And that's one thing that when he told me about the teams, when he talked to me and talked about what he was thinking about doing, and we brought up all this stuff, and he said, "Hey, Coach, you know how I am." I said, "I know. I just want to make sure your mindset is still good," because of what he was dealing with his daddy and all the things that were going through when he didn't get drafted. And I wanted to make sure his mindset was right. And he did not waver of his confidence of being able to go anywhere and perform and do what he needed to do to make a team. And I said, "You got that mindset, you're going to be fine, man. You're going to be fine." So you're getting a guy that's definitely coming in confident and ain't scared of competition. And that's what we try to recruit and instill in the guys when they get to Tallahassee. Say, you don't come here if you don't think you're going to have to compete, because we bring in other guys on scholarships to try to take your job every day like the NFL. You're always trying to replace them. So the process in his head of what it's going to take to make it in that next level, because I've been in that situation where he's trying to go, so I try to instill the things that he's going to be dealing with when he get there. So he know about competition, and that's one thing he ain't going to do, run from competition.
Final question for me for Lawrence Dawsey. You mentioned the 40 time. They clocked him at 4.65 at the Combine, Lawrence. Is he one of those guys who maybe isn't a good underwear Olympics guy, but that plays faster on the field? Is that why the disparity?
Yes. You know, we get caught up on that track, with that track time stuff. You don't see many track guys, you know, playing football. And that's the thing that NFL, you go out there and judge a guy from standing still coming up. You ain't just doing that on the football field. So the combine 40 time is a lot overrated, I think, a lot of times. Heck, I wasn't even a fast guy. I ran a 4.63 at the combine when I came out. So speed is definitely overrated. And, you know, I was fortunate to make the team and play for 7 years in the league. So the speed is definitely overrated. It's about the mentality and being a football player. And y'all got a great football player in Travis Rudolph.
Great stuff. Before I let you go, Lawrence, you did spend a year with the Giants after several years with the Buccaneers, put up some really good numbers in Tampa Bay. I'd be remiss if I didn't at least give you a chance to just give us a memory or two of your season with the Giants. I covered you. I remembered when you were here. You were the third receiver. We had Chris Callaway, Thomas Lewis.
Yeah.
Amani Toomer was hurt that year. You know, I know it was a rough year. I know Dave Brown didn't have a great season. I understand that, but do you have any positive thoughts that kind of bring a smile to your face when you think about playing for the Giants?
No doubt. You know, coming out of Tampa, we were, you know, having sellouts. You know, with a good time in Tampa, and get to New York and show up, and man, completely sold. I used to turn around and just see all that giant blue. You be like, man, this is what football is all about. So the Giants really taught me what NFL football was about, being in a home field advantage, and I'll never forget that. And then just being so close in the city to be able to enjoy all the Broadway shows and all the entertainment stuff that they had there. It was a great experience for me being in New York that year.
Well, Lawrence, one of the names that Paul didn't mention, I was hoping maybe he could give us some dirt on him because he's one of our colleagues. Howard Cross was also on that team.
Lawrence, you got to have a war story about Howard in some capacity,
I'm hoping.
Hey, you know what? I can say one thing about, because I'm from Alabama, even though I went to Florida State and I'm back in coaches. But Howard was from Alabama, too, and he went to the University of Alabama. So he always took care of me. That was my homeboy when I was there. He always pulled me around and what the pros and cons and what to do and not to do. So I can't say nothing bad about Howard. He was a great teammate. Great teammate when I was there.
Well, I think one of the best things that could have happened to Travis Rudolph is that he had you at Florida State and you were able to help direct him to the Giants, and I certainly hope it works out well. And Lawrence Dawsey, we really appreciate you taking the time to share thoughts with us today. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Lawrence.
No problem. Thank you. Enjoyed it. Y'all have a great day.
You as well. Florida State wide receivers coach Lawrence Dawsey, former Giant, played on the 1996 team, kind enough to give us a few minutes and give his take on what Travis Rudolph will provide for the team.
You know, what I like about this is that he said that as a free agent, there were teams that were coming after him strong, and he had the ability to share personal experiences about playing in New York, about playing for the Giants, the organization. He really was able to give him some logical and smart and wise advice in terms of steering him. And, you know, to me, the firsthand experience, you know, it's not just somebody coming in from, some outside situation saying, yeah, I think that's probably a good spot for you. The Lawrence Dawsey could tell him from being here, hey, this is a good fit for you. I think you can do this. I think that's helpful.
it never hurts when you hear from somebody that's been there before in the league. And also, by the way, Lawrence Dawsey played for Florida State, so he can understand and relate to now what Rudolph has to do in terms of making the transition. I would think that that would be something that's attractive to the player to hear from a guy that went to the same school, made the transition to the pros. And understands what it means to adapt. And to me, one of the biggest takeaways is, you know, when we talk about wide receivers and who's going to push to maybe become that fifth or sixth wide receiver on the team, we're always looking for, you know, who could get the separation, who can make the big catches in the preseason games and in practice. But, you know, Lawrence was talking about special teams and the fact that Travis Rudolph did not play special teams. Part of that was because they wanted to keep him healthy, which I'm sure a lot of other college players can relate to that too.
I'm sure.
When they're stars, they don't want you getting hurt or putting yourself in a precarious situation in college. But the fact that at least he prepared him mentally for, hey, well, you've got to keep your eyes open. This is something you got to get involved
in. The fact that he was recruited as a defensive back was important for me. Because as Lawrence Dawsey said, it wasn't about how he didn't have it. It was like, okay, we made him a receiver because we loved him as a receiver. I just wanted to make sure he hit that switch again because
he's
going to
tap back into that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he knows that the player has it in him. Now it's just a matter of making sure he brings it out. Hit the switch, bring it out again, and use that defender's mentality on special teams. Again, glowing reviews. We try to bring you the guys who know these players better than anybody because it's our opinion here on the program. We're not telling them what to say. Obviously, we're not. We're asking legitimate questions, and we simply want to know as much as we can about the player so that we can make an honest assessment and we know what to look for. I love that we can get guys like Lawrence Dawsey on because he knows. He knows exactly what this guy is. It's great stuff. I'm so glad we're able to do this, and I appreciate the cooperation of all the folks,
yeah,
all the folks who give us that kind of insight during the course of the offseason as we're preparing for the year.
201-939-4513, that is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to some tweets. Right now we want to open up the phone lines. Everything up for discussion as OTAs continue. We're inching closer, though, to mandatory minicamp, which gets underway next Tuesday. Ken is in New Jersey, and he gets us going here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Ken?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. How you guys doing today?
Hi.
Well, Ken. What do you got for us?
NFL Network reported that Beckham's looking for a new contract yesterday, and I just wanted to call up and squash it before you guys get 100 phone calls. Beckham signed a $25 million contract with Nike, a five-year $25 million contract with Nike, and he has to play in order to get paid. He has to be wearing Nike cleats during those games. So I very highly doubt that Beckham's going to hold out in the season. Now, if he holds out in training camp, that's a different story, but when it comes game time, the man's going to be suited up to play.
Well, once again, I mean, you've heard the same speculation that we've heard, and Paul and I actually brought up that report that ESPN's Adam Schefter even had earlier in the week, and right now it's just pure speculation. I will say this again, and I will continue to say it. Tuesday is the start of mandatory minicamp.
Correct.
You're mandated to be
here. I know, it's my birthday.
So when we see who's here on Tuesday, then I think there's more substance to perhaps the conversation. But until Tuesday comes...
No, there is no conversation
Tuesday. That's exactly
Period.
What I made clear.
Period.
Yeah. And I'll leave it at that. When things are involuntary, it's hard to have this conversation. When things are mandated, then, you know, we're talking about something.
Yeah, there's something to worry about if he doesn't show up to mandatory stuff, I guess. But just, like the caller said yesterday, I think it was, he missed all of training camp in his first year. He missed a couple of games, and he came out and put up 1,000 yards. You know, like, the man's a beast. I don't really think he needs OTAs, but I would like some continuity with the new players and him and all that good stuff. But, you know, I think this is a championship year. I think there's no reason to think otherwise. This team was close last year, and they've obviously gotten better on all three phases of the game. And let's hope it plays out. Thanks, guys, for taking my call.
You got it, Ken. Okay. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hello?
Nick,
hey,
are you there?
Fellas.
Hey,
what's
Nick.
Up?
What's happening?
Hi.
All right. Yesterday, Paul, I heard what you were saying afterwards about Barry Sanders. The one thing is that greatest jump cut, Paul Perkins has a nice jump cut too, doesn't he?
He does. He does. I told you that.
He was like Swiss cheese, you know, finding the holes in Swiss cheese.
I told you guys that when I scouted Perkins going into the draft, he had the best jump cut of any college prospect coming out of that running back class last season. There's no question about that. And the Giants, in my time with the Giants, and I'm 35 years now, two guys, Tiki Barber, Dave Meggett, had really good jump cuts. And this guy's could be better.
And you know what you also said yesterday? You guys were saying, who would you take, Tiki Barber or Jerome Bettis? You know what? I'm taking Tiki Barber.
Me too.
And I'm moving Jerome Bettis to fullback.
That's
listen,
that's
a couple
roles.
Things, Paul.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Barry Sanders thing. You said he moved through like Swiss cheese. He didn't have a line very much, so did he? Either. Not a very good line. That's why he had a lot of negative yards. That's why I told you to look at him in college, because when he had a good line opening up things for him, you see that's why he got 2,600 yards and 39 touchdowns in 11 games. That's all I'm saying with that. If he had that great wall of Dallas, then I think he would have had 20,000 yards if he would have played 14
Nick,
or 15
to be fair,
years. You know
to
I mean?
Be fair,
but anyway,
to be fair, though, hold on a second. To be fair, there were often people lined up 9 in a box against the Lions in those days too. So he was going up against an army
him,
of defenders,
man,
on a lot of carries.
Yeah, plus, you know, Barry.
That's what to me makes him so much better.
I understand.
Because he was up against, like, he didn't have those great lines like Emmitt did.
I understand.
Walter Payton is my number one running back of all time.
There's nothing wrong with that.
He went through adversity. He went through some good and bad times, and he still was always a guy that just kept getting a lot of yards every season. He didn't hit 2,000. He didn't hit, you know, big numbers every season, but it was consistency every year, always pounding the ball. That's what makes Walter Payton great to me. And he could receive the ball, too. You were pointing out that Barry Sanders wasn't much of a receiver. But
No, he wasn't.
Marshall Faulk was a great receiver when it comes to running backs.
Yes, he was.
But there's always a group of running backs that are so elusive that even if they have offensive line troubles, they still find a way to overcome that. Barry Sanders, to me, regardless of the O-line that was in front of him, you know he was always going to make people miss. I mean, that was his M.O. And I think the numbers showcase that.
Spectacular player.
Exactly.
It's like John said yesterday. It's like he had Crisco on him.
Yeah, he was a slippery guy.
Covered in Crisco.
Yeah. I mean,
he had rubber ankles too, man.
Well,
he could stop and just go on. Like I've never seen nothing like it.
The thing
anyway,
about
Sanders
was like a firefly because you couldn't get a
hand.
Sanders was like a firefly in that he'd be moving around and you couldn't get hands on him.
Like
seriously,
a gnat, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's trying to get rid of you.
Unlike a guy, for example, like Walter Payton, who could break tackles, Emmitt Smith, who could break tackles, Jim Brown, who would run through your ribs.
Yeah,
okay?
Like I told you, Paul, he was big back in the day. He run guys over.
Sanders was a different guy. I think Sanders probably avoided contact better than any running back I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too. I totally agree. Totally agree. That's why I love the guy. I wish he would have played 15 years because then we'd be talking about probably him being number one. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. Just like Bo Jackson, you know, what could have been.
Oh, man.
Anyway, Odell, I agree with what the guy said before. I wasn't going to say nothing about it because the last time I talked about Odell was with the boat trip and, you know, dropping the pass in the end zone. You know, if he wants a big contract, you know, you got to catch the ball when it comes to the playoffs, like Julio Jones, like, you know, Brown does, like these big receivers, you know. That's what he'll get when he shows in the spotlight. But he's got the biggest shoe deal going on right now. I mean, only thing with me is, you know, because I know guys haven't gone to OTAs. You know, Carl Banks has talked about it. You'll like this, Paul. I used to do a few jobs, you know, over the years when I was younger, up in Westwood for one of the greatest offensive guards, you know, and you know who I'm talking about, Carl Nelson.
Good man.
Guy.
He was a tackle. But, yes,
great
I know.
Guy. Well, tackle, and they moved him inside sometimes, didn't they, Paul?
Not usually,
no. He always played right tackle. He was Joe
Morris's
first
less
score.
Anyway,
you wanted to be behind him when you ran the ball. He was a nice guy, though, too. His family's nice and everything.
Yep.
I asked him about my favorite player, my favorite Giant, my defensive best defensive player of all time, and you know who I'm talking about. And he said LT never went to any of this stuff. You know, they didn't have OTAs back then, but he never went to anything.
No.
And you know how it panned out during the week. But on Sunday, he was ready to go. But a lot of guys, Strahan, you know, but that's not what I'm talking about. I just think he's showing, you know, a little bit of T.O. mentality. It's all about me, you know, and I hope he doesn't get worse, because just imagine some bad times that we might have in the future, and he's going to get worse with his on and off the field, you know, attitude. You know what I mean? It's about me, me, me. I just wish he was there with, you know, his quarterback, with these new guys, and I wish he was getting chemistry down, but it is what it is, you know what I mean? But it hurts me seeing him with Manziel, and, you know, I know Chris Carter can show him how to catch the ball. That's Mr. Hands. But, you know, it's just like he didn't have to tweet that out. He didn't have to do things. It's just he's showing a lot of selfishness. I hope he gets, you know, matured with that stuff, you know, because he can be such a great player. He's to me, he's already showing everybody like another LT, but on offense, just a guy that changes the game.
Yep.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you there.
Thank you, Nick.
And appreciate the phone call. At the end of the day, though, and I brought this up on previous shows, Paul, all of this stuff to me is minutiae in the big picture of things, because players based on greatness are judged by what they do on the field. It's convenient. It's June 8th, 2017. We are far away from training camp at this point. We're far away from the regular season. All of this stuff is going to be irrelevant in the minds of fans when we get to the thick of things in week two and week three.
You know, it's downtime for the writers. They're thirsty for something to write about. They desperately want something to write about. And so this kind of stuff becomes a huge story instead of just one line at the bottom, which said Giants had OTA today. Oh, so-and-so wasn't there. Maybe that's what it really deserves at most, but because they're so thirsty to write about something and they're so thirsty for the clicks and so thirsty for the headlines, it becomes the main story with the headline instead of one line at the bottom of the notes. That's really what we've come down to. And, you know, thank you, Twitter. Thank you, Instagram, because that has really blown so much of this stuff way out of proportion. It's the evil side of what technology has brought to the table.
Well, and it's not, I agree with you in terms of the evil connotation, but it's also the psychological side. People are now, we're getting to the point, Paul, where we're psychoanalyzing a player's not at OTAs. How is that going to then impact the production on the field? These are the types of conversations we're having. Mm-hmm. When we're also talking about a wide receiver who has had at least 1,300 receiving yards and double-digit touchdowns in each of his first three seasons. And by the way, he missed four games in his rookie campaign. So he's proven consistency in terms of his production on the field. Why are we then getting so overwhelmed over missing OTAs and how that's now going to take away from the offensive production?
Once again, I could make a long list on this wall of the number of all-pro players, okay, who missed voluntary workouts during the offseason in my 35 years here. Michael Strahan, OCU Manure, Harry Carson. Should I go on and on and on?
Of course.
As to how many of them missed voluntary spring workouts at one time or another? Honestly. Did they win championships? Did they go to Pro Bowls? Did some of those guys go to the Hall of Fame? Yeah.
Well, that's why I said it. To me, it gets back to if you have a player that misses practice constantly during the course of a season, and then you see that the production drops during a regular season game, there's substance there, no? Would you agree that maybe you could point to the fact the player missing practice impacts what's happening in the games?
Well, yeah. During the season, absolutely.
And the same thing you could say, if there's a player that has missed OTAs, the voluntary sessions, each and every year, and then you get to the regular season and you notice, you know what, that player's not the same, then I think you could draw some conclusions. I just don't think there's any evidence with Beckham where you could say missing OTAs, you know for a fact that this is negatively going to impact what he does on the field.
Look at it this way. If a guy during his time off is training on his own, but then when he shows up for work, he's in shape, and he's prepared to practice, and he's going to do everything that he's asked to do to prepare with his teammates to go out there on Sunday and help them win games, then that's fine. That's fine. The problem comes in if the guy shows up to the mandatory minicamp or whatever the mandatory reporting date is, let's say it's the 6 weeks between minicamp and the regular season and when they start real training camp. If the guy shows up and he's 10 pounds overweight, and he's soft, and he's mushy, and it's quite clear he's been doing nothing but kicking up his feet and eating, you know, crumb cake all day. You laugh. There have been players who've done that.
Oh, no, I'm aware. I'm just chuckling. Just
and what happens? Usually within a couple of practices or within a week, they get hurt. Because they weren't conditioning themselves properly. They weren't training themselves
properly.
Or
they don't even pass the physical, by the way.
Yeah. Those guys, let me tell you something. It's too hard to fool the coaches and your teammates and the people who watch practice at training camp. You can't fool them. They'll know if you did not put the work in when you were away from campus. They will know immediately that you are not right. You'll be way behind on the gassers. You won't finish the gassers. You might fall on the ground and throw up during gassers. You were not in condition. It will show up immediately like a giant sore thumb. Those are the guys that you need to have a problem with. Those are the guys that people should be screaming about and saying they didn't live up to their side of the bargain by getting themselves prepared for training camp and for the season. That's what you want to yell about. And those are the only people you want to yell about.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's get to a few tweets, people who may not have an opportunity to get to the phone lines. At FreddieJ_23, we were talking about Travis Rudolph earlier. Here's an interesting fun fact he throws out. Travis Rudolph is cousins of Devin Hester. I did not realize that. Did you realize that?
I do not know that.
Well, this is what Freddie is throwing out. So if anything, I guess we could jump to conclusions that I guess Devin Hester could give him a few tips about special teams, if that's the case.
Oh, yeah, great coach he would be, as a matter of fact. And I do see that on an ABC News story out of Florida.
I didn't realize that, yeah.
Which I had not known prior. And all the stuff that we had talked about in learning when he was coming to the Giants, the Devin Hester connection never came up.
Another tweet on Travis Rudolph at Christoval1. Do you see the Giants putting Rudolph through some cornerback drills? Because we were talking about earlier when Lawrence Dawsey called up that he was a defensive back in high school. I don't think there's been any indication that they plan on experimenting with him at the cornerback position. So I really would not anticipate seeing anything like that. I think if anything, you'll see guys in the secondary moved around maybe between corner and safety as they look to experiment with that. But there's no indication that any wide receivers are going to make the transition.
No.
So I would be very surprised with respect to that. Mark at Mark, former Chicago. I thought Rodney Hampton early on had great change of direction, if not a jump cut, then evolved into more of a power runner. And it's funny, we were talking about this before the show. That's exactly how you said
he
evolved.
I think we talked about this even on the show in the last couple of days at one point. He was more of a slasher, more of a quick back, did not have a jump cut. He could slash. He did not have that jump cut that we're talking about. In fact, Megan had a better jump cut than Tiki Barber did. Barber was a cutback runner. That's not quite the same as having a jump cut. The jump cut takes it to a whole nother level. Okay? Megan had that. And Paul Perkins does too. And that's one of the things that I got excited about when the Giants drafted him. I said, wow, we're going to get a chance to watch this now up close and personal. It's a rare talent. Not every back brings that to the table. And if you have it and can use it effectively, it's a very good weapon.
Now, speaking of Paul Perkins, I know you talked about this on yesterday's show, but the position coaches did talk, and one of the things that came up was the running back position. And, you know, Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, he was asked whether or not he thinks Paul Perkins can be a workhorse, a guy that can maybe handle 17 to 20 carries a game. And his answer is, you know, we'll have to see. He did note that he could handle that type of a workload in college, if you go back to what he did at UCLA. But I always go back to what Craig Johnson said two seasons ago, coming off the 15 campaign when they were mixing in guys every other game, and he said that what they were hoping to do in 2016, Paul, was let's find definitive roles for running backs and let's not necessarily play a game of musical chairs. So while, you know, even if Perkins doesn't necessarily get 20 a game, I still think going into this season they want to have defined roles for whatever they envision the running game to look like, whether it be two guys that they use regularly, whether it be three guys they use regularly.
Yeah, I would would agree with that.
They want to have at least guys knowing when you go into the game, this is what we're expecting out of you.
I would agree with that, although they still want to have some sense of versatility there because you don't want the defense to know if he's in the game, this is what they're doing. And they had that with Andre Williams. They knew, quite frankly, Andre Williams is in the game. He's either going to run the ball between the tackles or chances are he's going to be kept in a block. He's not going to go out and catch a screen pass. They're probably not going to run him out on the edge. You pretty much knew what Andre Williams was going to do. You don't want the pigeonholing of each of the backs, but you do want a concentration of the style of stuff that we'd like to do when that guy's in there. I do want to add this. John said this yesterday. I knew he was wrong, or should I say I knew he was a bit off, suggesting that Perkins carried the ball 20 times a game in college. 39 games. Had 621 carries. That is not 20 times a game. He was not a 20-time-a-game carry back. I think I understood John's point that he could be something in the teens or something close to that potentially. But, you know, you look at a guy, you know, and you want to say, well, he's a 20-time carry back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times last year in 12 games. Did he carry the ball 20 or more times? So, no, I don't think he is a 20-carrier back for 16 games in the National Football League. No, I don't. I think he's 16 maybe.
I think he could maybe get a little bit more. Maybe if you also consider the touches, if he gets a few receptions, you're probably going to get to at least 20 touches, if not more, per game. I could see that. I don't think that's a stretch. You think even that's a stretch?
No,
you
I think...
You give him 16 carries, you give him 4 catches.
And maybe that's more along the lines of what John was talking about. 20 touches a game, I guess I could see that. I'd like to believe that the Giants, because of what they hope is a balanced attack in the backfield, and they hope that they do have Vereen in there for a lot of third downs, and they hope that they've got somebody who can get the short yardage stuff, I'd like to think even Perkins' numbers even could come down a little bit. Maybe he carries the ball 13 or 14 times a game, touches it 4 or 5 times, and he's still a shade under 20. The bottom line is they need the running game to be productive. That's the bottom line. I'll be perfectly frank with you. As much as I like Paul Perkins, I could give a horse's butt as to him getting 20 carries a game or even 1,000 yards. If Perkins gained 900 yards on the ground and Gallman winds up gaining 800 yards on the ground, I think the Giants would be thrilled with that.
And they'd get some balance as a result of
you
that,
know?
Too. Yeah.
And somebody else, Darkwell, ran for 8 touchdowns. Fine. It's about the core, the running back core.
Yeah.
Let's not get caught up in one guy's individual stats. That's what fantasy football people do. You know? This is the real game. That's why I love the real game. And I don't play fantasy football.
I agree with you. I think even when this season is all said and done, when you evaluate the running game, you've got to look at what the group does, because what we've been talking about over the last few seasons, I mean, we could sit here and talk about there were flashes for certain running backs, Paul, but the numbers overall, the yardage per carry, the total yards per game, that's what you need
to
see.
What are the team numbers?
Of course. I mean, those are the numbers you have to look at first before we get involved in individuals. One other thing, though, I wanted to add, when you were alluding to the fact that you've got to be careful when you define roles for running backs because you don't want to become too predictable for the defense. The positive, though, Paul, is when you look at a guy like Perkins, when you look at a guy like Vereen, considering they can both catch the football out of the backfield, that makes them that much more dangerous, because even if you use them on certain downs as a defense, you still don't know necessarily whether or not they're going to be a receiver or a running back on the play.
Agreed.
So when the versatile running back is in the backfield, that's good for your entire team.
Agreed.
Can't hurt you from that standpoint. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. The other things that I wanted to point out, because I wasn't on yesterday when we were reacting to what the position coaches were mentioning, but it also relates to starting jobs and roles. Two things jumped out to me. Number one was the fact that Mike Solari, the offensive line coach, admitted that they envisioned DJ Fluker as a guard. He didn't say where as a guard, but they're picturing him as a guard, and he'll likely get work at tackle starting in training camp to protect for injury, which to me makes a lot of sense. The second thing was the fact that Dave Merritt, the safeties coach, and this is not a huge surprise, but it's unusual for coaches to admit this or at least publicly admit this early in the game, was he made it clear that Darian Thompson is in line to reclaim the starting job that he lost because of injury after just 2 games last season. But he did make it his point to say Andrew Adams, he's been impressed with Andrew Adams this offseason. He's been impressed with Andrew Adams' work ethic. And even though Thompson's the front runner, he would not count Andrew Adams out. And he did also mention, Paul, and this also goes without saying, they view the safety position, they need four guys. They don't need two guys. They need four guys going into this season that they feel are reliable and they're confident in mixing and matching them.
Well, I wonder if that fourth guy could potentially be Michael Thompson if he shows that he can do both the slot corner job and the safety job. Because that would really help them out in terms of the 53-man roster if they've got a guy who could do both. And if they could count Michael Thompson as a safety, as the fourth safety, as the last line of attack in that safety depth chart, but yet also say, hey, you know what? We're working him at slot corner if we need him. That would be wonderful. What a great luxury for the Giants if he can prove that he can do both of those things.
Well, that's similar to what Leon Hall did for the team last year.
Well, and it's also something they were kind of hoping that they would get out of Bennett Jackson a couple years ago before he got hurt.
And they had moved him back and forth in terms of positions. He actually even made a positional change.
Yes.
In order to give him a better chance to make the roster. So that is something to watch. But I still think, though, even with Michael Thompson, let's say he proves his versatility, given the lack of durability that he's shown, Paul, I still think you need more insurance at that position, though. I don't think he can just get away with saying, well, he can do two roles, so therefore we can keep one less safety or one less corner. Can you afford to do that based on the fact that he's barely stayed on the field? To me, that's very risky.
Well, we're not making that decision now.
Of course not. But you I'm just saying, even when you get to the down the line, and what if he
doesn't miss any practices, is in training camp, doesn't miss any practice at training camp, plays every preseason game, all of a sudden now, you know, his durability questions maybe aren't as big as you think they are. Because now you're cutting down to 53 and it's getting tight. And you're in that room and you're trying to squeeze sardines into the can and trying to figure out those 53.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden maybe it's like, well, wait a minute now. He's been on the field all summer, hasn't given us any trouble. We could squeeze that sardine into the can. I'm just saying.
Well, that's why it certainly is beneficial to have players that can be interchangeable between the safety and the cornerback position. That's what I think is appealing by Michael Thompson. I just don't know. From even a coaching perspective, do you say to yourself, well, a guy survived the preseason, a guy survived training camp, is that an indication that he's definitely going to hold up over the course of a season, though? Does that make you more comfortable?
That's why you have a veteran shortlist of free agents in your back pocket in case you need them. And also why it's important to note that the practice squad, while I often tell people that a big portion of your practice squad simply is for practice to prepare your starters, you do certainly want some prospects on that practice squad. And maybe you make sure that you have a safety who you have some belief in on that practice squad because he may have to be elevated at some point.
Well, and that's why it's important to look at all of these undrafted players who may have a legitimate shot to get to the practice squad, assuming they don't clear waivers, and get claimed by a team, because guys that know the scheme, they're valuable. I mean, how many guys, not that you ever want to go into a season envisioning this, but think about all the players, Paul, over the last few seasons that have been promoted from the practice squad, and the Giants have turned to them because of injuries or all of a sudden somebody's suffering a concussion and they need somebody to move up. It happens.
You know, I think for me, and Nat Burhe is still on the roster, okay, I think he'd be more of a medical question for me than Michael Thompson because he's had concussions, you know.
That's fair.
Several. Well, I shouldn't say several, but a few. Or many. I don't know. I don't know how – you know what? Let me just take off the adjective. I don't know how many.
Well, but it's something he's been dealing with.
But he's dealt with them.
I think that's fair.
And to me – that's a bigger concern if you're going to talk about durability and a guy who can last on your team for 16 weeks. That'd be more of a scary red flag for me than what Michael Thompson has had to deal with.
See, I agree with you because of concussions obviously can keep you out. I'm just also looking at it as Nat Burhe, though, has been on the field in some game situations.
He has.
Versus Thompson, that hasn't been
the case. Strictly talking about durability, A against B, or X against Y, durability-wise, I'd feel better about Michael Thompson's durability if he can get through an entire summer and preseason. That would probably be enough for me to give him the win on durability over a guy like Burhe.
Well, and that's why Michael Thompson is one of the intriguing stories as we
enter
the training camp.
He really is.
And you could say that about a lot of guys that are coming off of injury, but these are the ones that – it's not so much you're hoping to see something like a wow factor occur in practice or in a preseason game. You just want to see how they hold up, Paul. I mean, it's really the game of durability for a lot of these players coming off of injury. I mean, it's the same thing. I've brought his name up. I mean, JT Thomas, who, by the way, was brought up too. When
yes.
the positional coach has spoken, Thomas has been doing some work on the side. He's been working with
doing
the trainers.
Doing everything they want him to do in the film room.
Correct. And he's been very good in the classroom. But
yeah.
they're still at the point where they want to see it carry over to the football field.
Exactly.
Even though he is a veteran who's been on the field and has proven that he could be on the field, but they're at the point where it's show-me time somewhat
I think
with him.
We've had a lot of critics about the Giants keeping JT Thomas on this program over the last several months, but I think one of the reasons that he is being given the right to compete is that he has been a good leader, a good locker room guy, a studious workout warrior in terms of the playbook and the film. If he didn't bring all of that to the table, maybe they wouldn't have been so willing to give him a chance to heal and to rehab and to compete at training camp like he is being given the chance to do now.
You know, the other thing, speaking of that, I'm glad you touched on the system, because when Bill McGovern, the linebackers coach, spoke to the media, Paul, one of the things he mentioned is, remember, it's only my second year in the system.
Yeah.
People tend to forget about that. It's a lot of the players' second year in the system. Not just the rookies. I'm talking about
no
even
doubt.
Vets. So having a guy like JT Thomas, who's been here for a little bit longer than even the coaching staff, he understands the system, sort of a pseudo type of coach-less-teacher in the classroom. There's value to that in my mind, Paul, and maybe the fans don't see it this way. When you have a 90-man roster, mm-hmm. I think there's still value to having – players serve as coaches who at least have been here a little bit longer than actually some of the coaches.
Yeah.
No, because I think the way we look at it is Spags has been here for an additional year, much more so than a lot of the guys that are serving under him. So they're still digesting his scheme.
You have just made the point as to why the Giants have brought in Antonio Pierce to tutor up B.J. Goodson. Who better than to teach a young linebacker in the Spags system what the Spags system is all about and what he has to know and what he has to develop and what he has to improve on than bringing in AP and saying, heck, you want a Super Bowl with Spags as his middle linebacker. Why don't you come on in and help tutor this young kid? That you've just made the argument for me.
Well, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I think what McGovern was saying, and he was being honest with the media, I almost feel like based on how the defense performed last year, Paul, everybody thinks this was a well-oiled machine that has been together for, you know, 5 or 6 years.
And credit to those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it is a huge credit that things clicked and things turned so quickly. But I look at Bill McGovern, the linebackers coach. I look at Patrick Graham, the defensive line coach. Both of those individuals.
Brand new.
Last year was season number one. Walton carried over with Tom Coughlin because he had come in. Okay, so he's here a little bit longer. And Dave Merritt's been here since Coughlin arrived. So he's the senior of the group. And Spags came in before Ben McAdoo took over too. So you have some continuity there. But you're talking about the entire front seven of this defense is a lot of players and coaches both sort of doing a trial by error type of routine.
I think that you know, the good news for the Giants right now is not only do they have these coaches coming back for another year, but they've got a bunch of veterans mixed in with young guys, and you love to have that combination because they're not all learning it at the same time. There are enough of veterans around who do understand what it is that some of the holdover coaches are talking about and that they can help out. I mean, look, the fact that guys like Olivier Vernon's been in this league for a long time, even though he just got to the Giants last year. That's a good thing. JPP's been here for a number of years. That's a good thing. Snacks, been in this league for a handful of years. You know, when they rebuilt this defense, they went after, remember, young, experienced veterans. They didn't go after just old guys or just, hey, we're going to get as many young guys. No. They went for young and experienced. It was a combination. It was a blend of things because they thought that that would blend the best on this roster. And now what happens? Now you add the rookie corner, Eli Apple. You add the rookie safety in Thompson. You got the second-year guy in Collins. If you look at the chart of years and games of experience on this Giants defense, it's up and down, up and down. It's all over the place, like a seismograph. That was done on purpose. They didn't want the same level of experience all over this defense. They wanted it to be a mixture. And I think that's important. I really do.
Grooming guys at the same time, having some polished vets. Also, I think that helps what you just laid out, Paul, from a salary cap contractual standpoint.
No question.
You don't want everybody up at the same time because it's going to be impossible to keep the defense together. If you have guys staggered all around, then you realize, all right, this guy's contract expires this year, 2 years later, this guy expires. I think it's a little bit more manageable to keep the group together.
Well, and quite frankly, you know, getting reasonable, and again, what is reasonable in today's marketplace, but guys like Jonathan Casillas, guys like Keenan Robinson, you know, who were important players, you know, on this very, very good defense that the Giants put out on the field last year. Yeah, they broke the bank for guys like Vernon and Snacks and Jenkins. That is true. But some of these other veterans we're talking about, you know, they didn't necessarily have to put them at the top of the salary structure. And that was important, too.
Well, because you know the ins and outs.
You can't afford it.
Yeah. So clearly that has to be part of the process. That goes back to you're not just thinking about 2017, but you're thinking a little bit beyond when you put contracts together and you do some negotiating. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We had Lawrence Dawsey on earlier in the program, in case you missed that, the Florida State wide receivers coach. So he talked about Travis Rudolph, what he's going to bring to the team. We have delved into what some of the positional coaches mentioned yesterday to the media when they spoke with reporters, and we were highlighting some of the key phrases and key statements that some of these coaches made. We talked about what Bill McGovern spoke about with respect to the linebackers, Craig Johnson in terms of the running backs, Dave Merritt. Also spoke about Landon Collins, and that I think is important to note, Paul. What are the expectations for Landon Collins after he wowed everybody in year two? What can you consider statistically for him to do, and what can you consider in terms of how they're going to utilize him? I thought what was very interesting what Dave Merritt brought up, Paul. He referenced Antrell Roll, and the reason why he referenced Antrell Roll, and maybe this is to try to keep Landon Collins level-headed and see the big picture, and also, you know, address the fans so that they realize you can't take production for granted. If you recall, Antrell Roll in 2013 made the Pro Bowl.
Yes.
Had a great season. He had sacks. He had tackles. He had interceptions. He basically did a Landon Collins.
Best season of his career,
yeah.
I think.
Filled up the stat sheet across the board. Okay? It didn't necessarily reflect that from a team standpoint, but Roll came to play in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So then, okay, you're looking now to build off that impressive campaign. Roll, of course, older than Landon Collins. I'm not trying to indicate that this is definitely going to happen. It's just an example of what a guy does after he comes off a productive season. You can't take it for granted. 2014, though, the numbers did, Paul.
Yes, they did.
And you have to at least take that into consideration. Now, there are a variety of reasons why we could say the numbers dipped, and every player is different. But the reason why I thought it was interesting that Merritt brought that up is not to say that this is going to happen to Landon Collins, but it's almost like you got to dismiss the previous season. And you can't think about and get caught up about how enamored you are and what your numbers were the previous year.
McAdoo tried to preach that to all of us going into last season, that as he was taking over his first year as the Giants head coach, that just because the offense had been a top five offense the year before, it was not automatically going to happen in 2016. He was very clear about that. And guess what? He was right.
Yeah.
He was right.
In terms of how the production fell from 15 to 16, and they're now hoping to avoid that on defense.
Correct.
They're hoping to keep – it's not just Landon Collins. It's across the board, Paul.
Correct.
It's everybody. They want to maintain that level of continuity. And I think that as we laid out, the pieces are there. The personnel's there. The coaching is there. It's just football's unpredictable. And I know it sounds like the old cliche, but how many times have we seen great teams on paper? I mean, we've seen it. Everybody is a victim of this across the NFL landscape. Teams look great on paper, but it doesn't necessarily always translate.
It's June, and there are probably 25 NFL fan bases and teams that think they're going to be in the playoffs. I think there are a handful that know.
I think there may be even more than 25. Maybe some wishful thinkers, but there's a lot.
There are a handful, I think, that know their team is not going anywhere. There's probably one real close geographically speaking to us that knows they're not making the playoffs.
Boy, that was a little subtle entry into there.
Yeah. Just saying, I think that's what those fan bases would say. I think there are, you know, I don't think the fan bases in Cleveland think that the Browns are going to the playoffs. I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Well, there's hope that they can get more than one win, though.
But that's not what I asked.
Well, no, I know. I'm just trying to put things in perspective.
I'm sure there are a few.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. No, but you're right, though. There's a lot of teams and a lot of fan bases that are optimistic, and then there's a few, as you mentioned, that maybe are a little bit more realistic. But in fairness, if you're a fan and you're optimistic, you should be. This is the time of the year you should be optimistic.
And that's why you don't want to be one of those fan bases that knows you have no chance.
Exactly. This is the time of the year where you should be in good shape. It's then when you get into September and October where you actually have games to go by that you start to realize that maybe things are not necessarily they appear to be. Indeed. Well, we appreciate all the phone calls, the Twitter interaction as well. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running again tomorrow at noon Eastern. There will be media availability. So actually, wait a minute. If I'm correct, the show is 11 a.m.
It's
Eastern
11 tomorrow.
So I corrected
it's
myself.
Being moved.
An hour early. The program starts. So
busy
sure
day
that,
here at the complex.
You set your clocks and your calendars accordingly. 11 a.m. Eastern is the start for tomorrow's program. And then next week on Monday, we'll be back to noon Eastern. We want to thank Lawrence Dawsby for hanging in there. I'm butchering his name. Florida State wide receivers coach, also the former Giant, for weighing in on Travis Rudolph. If you missed that, you can check back earlier in the program to hear that interview. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.